Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee! The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. Definitely appreciate everybody for tuning in, man. We got a loaded show. First things first, we got David James making it happen.
Yes, sir.
You already know. We're going to bring in Yahoo Sports, Charles McDonald. He is going to dive into the defensive line with us. I definitely am looking forward to that. We got Chris Sanders, Run TMC. Got a little something for you, too, man. We're going to make this a wide receiver-centric show. Bring in Derek Mason. I got to get his take on Treylon Burks. And, yeah, I'm just going to pause that, and we'll bring it up back up when D-Mace is ready for us. But in the meantime, what I want to do is just talk about Denard Wilson and just some of the things that he said, right? Obviously, the acquisition of Lejarius Sneed. And by the way, I don't know if you saw my post, but I went back and watched the Bills game, and I posted one of the clips of Lejarius Sneed covering Stephon Diggs and the footwork that he showed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I used to do football camps for DeSean Jackson back in the day. Before I got into media. And his camps, they used to call him fast. Footwork, agility, speed, technique. Everything except for speed was shown on that rep because it was a slant. He didn't really have to run because he shut the slant down so quick. But I love the way Sneed's feet are patient.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way his just approach is patient, where he allows the receiver to declare their route. Stephon Diggs, man, and I said it in the post, one of the best release packages in the game. One of the best. And he's a guy that sells the route real well, uses that basketball crossover. And he did that, and just go watch it. Go watch it.
Definitely.
It definitely. Each of you who haven't seen it, I definitely encourage you to. But it's just it's an exciting thing to see because now you have a guy in Sneed who can truly be put in cat coverage situations. And the reason why I mentioned Sneed right after I mentioned Denard Wilson, you know, he talked about Sneed and it was pretty cool just to see the excitement. Matter of fact, hey, let's go to Denard Wilson when he talked about the smile on his face when asked about Sneed. Here you go right here.
Smile on my face. I put a big smile on my face. Obviously, you know, during that transition period, you know, doing free agency, when you get a good player like him, you know, you always want to be happy. He's a guy that's been consistent throughout his career with the opportunities that he's presented. He's had success. And when you are consistent, you have success, you bring extreme value to a football team. Cheeto as well. You know, the way Cheeto plays the game of football, how tough he is, the athleticism, his ability to do multiple things, it allows you as a defense to line up and cover guys, you know, because this is a passing league these days. And the wide receiver talent is getting vastly good, you know, at a great speed. So for us to go up there and have guys that can compete, that aren't scared of the competition, that's going to line up and challenge guys as a defense, it makes you a better defense.
So you talk about the way the receiver position is getting, right, how it's getting better and better, and you're getting more teams. I mean, you look at a lot. There's a lot of teams with three legitimate receivers that can wreck your game plan if they get off. So what better way to approach it than having a guy like Sneed who can play left, right, nickel, travel with that receiver wherever you want, and then also notice how he, Denard Wilson, that is, mentioned Cheeto, Chidobe Awuzie. And I think, you know, what you're seeing is the confidence already just oozing in those two guys. And then obviously McCreary too. So naturally, when you have a guy like Sneed who, you know, check the internet, the resume speaks for itself when it comes to one-on-one coverage, right, and traveling. So naturally, I asked Wilson, you know, hey, what about developing that trust with Sneed to have him in cat coverage? Very excellent and interesting answer here. Check it out.
Anything with trust is you have to work to it. Trust is all about accountability, right? And he's an accountable player. You know, as we go through this offseason program and we start to compete against the offense, you know, we'll get our eyes and hands on him to know extremely how thorough he is about his assignment and what he does. And once we understand, you know, his strong suits and weaknesses, we'll put them in positions to line up and play in multiple spots. It's not always about, you know, from a scheme standpoint, it's not always about traveling to the best guy, because your coverage might dictate, say, go roll to the best guy, he travels away. Sometimes you might want a guy like him to be into the boundary, you know, but when you look at it, you look at Cheeto and you look at Snead together, you know, those guys can line up and play left and right. So it's what's going to be advantageous to the defense throughout the course of that week. But both of them had that skill set, and it's a benefit as a defensive coordinator, as a team, to have both of them.
It's absolutely a benefit when you can have a guy that you could just say, hey, look, I want you to neutralize so-and-so this week. Now, is that going to work every week? No, because, I mean, look, even the great Darrell Revis, you know, had problems with Stevie Johnson from Buffalo used to rout him to death. And it was just crazy how that used to be. But you always have somebody, right? And so that's not to say Snead won't get beat. He's going to get beat, folks. Just be ready for it. It's going to happen. I just like the way this team was able to get a player that you could just, you know, say, hey, look, that's your assignment. But then also have a physical player like Awuzie on the opposite side. And you got McCreary, who is very physical and plays with a lot of zest in the slot. So it's going to be fun watching that. But you look at this defensive line, and one of the things Denard Wilson said when he was asked about the defensive lineman other than Jeffrey Simmons, you know, he said, opportunity is now. That was his message to those guys in the defensive group, you know, to let them know, like, look, this is your chance to prove and show what you could do. And as a former DB coach and a former defensive back himself, I was curious, because you have this age-old adage where you got the Warren Sapps of the world, and they say, hey, the front end, we make it happen for the back end. Then you got the Deion Sanders. And I remember on NFL Network, I could picture them going back and forth, because Deion used to be like, oh, no, it's the back end. We make it happen for the front end. So as a former D-back and former DB coach, I wanted to get Denard Wilson's opinion of that, because obviously defensive back is his background. I really, really like this answer that he gave me. Check this out.
I've been trained. I used to be a former scout. We have great DBs. But in this game, the game is won in the trenches, right? Offensive line, defensive line. The way you win in the National Football League is you do what? You stop the run and you affect the quarterback. Now, is it merit? Yes, because when you can have corners or you have a scheme where they can get physical against receivers, and when that quarterback back foot hits and those receivers are connected, it causes a hesitation. It's a tick of time. And with a hesitation or tick of time, the D-lineman put them down. Also, when you have guys like Jeffrey Simmons and Arden Key and Weave and all these guys up front, when they can beat their one-on-ones, now the ball has to come out. And I told the D-line this and the linebackers this as well. If you're not hitting the quarterback, you're a pass rusher when you're hitting the quarterback. But if you're not getting to the quarterback, you now become a pass defender. All right, so you can alter the pass by the way you get there, putting your hand, matching a hand, certain things, moving the quarterback off the spot. So, yes, rushing coverage goes hand in hand on everything that we do.
So I love what he said about how it is married, right? And there are times where that front end is going to help the back end and vice versa. I couldn't help but smile when he talked about the quarterback looking over at the receiver and seeing him engaged. I was taught, like, we called it chatter. When you have some chatter at the line of scrimmage, the quarterback is quickly going to move on to his next progression, and that will give that defensive lineman an extra tick to get on. It's absolutely true. But then there's other times, like, you look at the Super Bowl itself, right? Chris Jones, he had that pressure. Brock Purdy, he throws a touchdown, because I think it was Ayuk in the back of the end zone. Yeah, it was Ayuk who was wide open in the back of the end zone. That's a touchdown. But the pressure allowed whoever that corner was to get off the hook. So, yeah, they do go hand in hand, man. That's great stuff right there. So, as mentioned, we're going to go ahead and transition over to talk a little wide receiver. And Derek Mason, former Titans receiver, a guy who should be in the Ring of Honor. That's another conversation. We ain't going to get into all that. But Treylon Burks, I want to get your take on Treylon, just as far as where you think he needs to go from here.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate for Treylon that he find himself in this position. You know, it he hasn't been on the field enough to get a good picture or good, you know, assessment of who he can potentially be as a player. Now, he's shown some flashes here and there, but because of, you know, the injuries that he's had, it's taken him off the field more times than not. And then, frankly, I don't think the last regime used him in the right way. Why? I don't know. But I think there's a lot of talent there. But this is the year where Treylon has to prove it. This is a new coaching staff, you know, second-year GM. And when all new head coaches come in, you know, they tell you you have a clean slate. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But I presume Treylon has a clean slate. So if he does, then he needs to prove to this coaching staff that he belongs on this team. I think he can help this team, but he's going to have to show the Titans that he can.
In your opinion, what is the right way to use Treylon Burks?
I think you use him the way that Arkansas used him back in the day. You put him in a slot, you put him outside, you motion him down, try to find a matchup problem. Because, again, he has the tools. We've seen it. He has the talent. Now you just got to put him in a space to be successful. We've heard this from Rand Carthon and Brian Callahan. They want to put guys in positions to succeed. So if that is indeed the case, you need to try to figure out how can we maximize Treylon Burks' talents, whether that's inside, at the slot receiver, on the outside. I think he's a versatile player. In today's NFL, with his big frame, he does have some speed to him. He's physical. You can put him anywhere on the field. If you want to put him at the X, you can put him at the X off the ball. If you want to put him at the Z, you can put him at the Z on the ball because of his physicality. And if you want to put him in the middle, then you can do that knowing that a lot of times you're going to be facing smaller corners.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. We're talking to Derek Mason, former Titans receiver, also analyst, everything you want on our own 102.5 The Game. With Treylon, though, how much of it do you think is a mental aspect? Like, how much can sharpening the mental side of things help him?
I think it's going to have to be that because we saw last year he came in, he was ready to go, he looked great. He was here for winning, you know, off-season conditioning every day. He put in the work so he could be ready physically for a long NFL grind. That he did do. So, from a mental standpoint and what they can possibly do, just keep him involved. Now, again, but if you want to truly see what this young man has, you got to make him feel involved. I don't think the last coaching staff made him feel involved, especially not during the season. So this coaching staff, if indeed you want to see what he has, then you got to keep him involved. From a mental standpoint, he has to understand that this season, it's all or nothing. He's not just auditioning for a potential another contract in another year or two. He's auditioning for 31 other teams out there. And if that is indeed the case, he has to go in with the mindset of this is a prove it year. You know, it's sort of like you've seen it, TD, with guys that are on contract years. They make it up in their mind, this is a contract year, so I got to ball out. Well, it's not a contract year for Treylon, but it is a big year for him to you know, solidify himself as a player for this team, and if not for this team, for somebody else's team.
You said it all when you said keep him involved, get him involved. Mm-hmm. As someone who's done it, that whole concept of getting involved in the game plan early and getting those touches early, how critical is that to a wide receiver?
It's very critical because even the best ones, that's why when you see when you watch NFL games across the board, teams are trying to give it to their playmakers early and often. Why? To keep them in the flow of the game so they don't ever check out. Even the greatest of players check out if they're not being involved in what's going on from the offensive side of the ball. So to me, they got to keep him involved with what's going on in the offense. So, because if you don't, then you're gonna freelance, you're gonna float out there, and you're not going to be in tuned in the game. And when they ask you to make a play, it's going to be harder to ramp it up than to already be in it. We've seen games when they've targeted Traylon, you know, three or four times in the first quarter, and he looks like a different player. That's the thing. The guy can play. You just got to take the initiative to try to get him the ball. I'm not saying, you know, the whole offense needs to be geared around Traylon Burks, because it doesn't. But if you know this guy has talent, then you need to design some things specifically for him early in the game to keep him in touch with the game. Because, again, the minute he loses touch with the game, you're not going to get much out of him. And it's going to be hard for him to ramp that thing back up.
Last thing, the one bit of advice you would give Burks if you guys went to Keith Bullock's coffee shop and shared a latte.
Well, first, we can't do a good spot to have a latte. That's the first thing I would say. We can't do a great spot to have a latte at Bullock's place. But then secondly, I would tell them this, and it was told to me a long time ago. Listen, control what you can control. But one thing you do not want to do is allow what they do to affect how you walk in that building. Mm. Because the minute you do that, everybody sees it. Everybody in the building sees your body language change. Everybody in the building sees it's different. So regardless if they're giving you, you know, minutes or not, they're giving you, you know, snaps or not, do not allow what they do affect how you walk and prepare for a game, a practice, a week. Because if you do, you're defeated already. And that was told to me, what was it, my second or third year in the league by Chris Sanders. Don't let them steal your joy. Go out there, play. And what's meant for you, you'll have it. And what's not meant for you, you won't.
Doesn't get much better than that right there. D-Mace, appreciate you, man. I tell you a quick story, too, a funny one. You know how you used to wear those strips on your nose?
Uh-huh.
I tried that back in college, man. It didn't do a thing for me, man.
Hey, man, I don't think it did much for me either, TD, but it just became a part of who I was, my daily, you know, my weekly thing. Because I didn't wear it during practice. It was only during the game.
Hey, listen, it's called putting the uniform on, man. I get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to tell you a little bit about Soho Footwear. Over there in Hendersonville, you need your sneaks, your J's, whatever you should need, man. Definitely make sure you go check them out. You mentioned TD10 and you get $10 off of $100. And they have a wide selection. So if you're a guy who or girl who already has a nice catalog of J's and Air Force Ones, et cetera, they'll still have something for you. Just go check them out. And if you're brand new to it, hey, just let them know. They'll guide you in the right direction. So definitely make sure you check out Soho, S-O-H-O. 615.com. And again, they're in Hendersonville.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Here we go. The lights fade. The music too. And now, starting for your Portland Trailblazers at point guard. Coming in at 6'3" from the University of Wisconsin, Stephen Poit, number 30, Terry Porter.
And now, starring for the New York Knicks, Patrick Ewing.
Nobody sweated like Patrick Ewing at the foul line, man.
Oh, my gosh, man. Remember when you played in Space Jam?
You're lucky. I should have stayed with this Arkansas theme that we're going to have in this segment. I should have called you Sidney Moncrief from the University of Arkansas. But it's okay. We're going to go from one Arkansas legend.
So what's up, big dog? How you been doing, bro?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Getting this off season started, which is a good thing as far as their phase one, the Titans, that is. And as I said, you know, Arkansas theme, right? We'll go from one Arkansas legend, Sidney Moncrief, to another one, Treylon Burks, who,
You
know, I guess you could call him an Arkansas standout. And listen, I wanted to get your take on Treylon Burks and just the idea of where you think he fits in with this Titans team.
You know, right now he's a third receiver because, you know, you got Calvin Ridley, you got D-Hop. But the thing about it is, I think you still can use him on the perimeter. So you go like 11 personnel with a 3 wide receiver set, you move Hop into the inside, put him in perimeter, and let him catch those comebacks, let him catch those curls, let him catch those D route. Because if you look at him when he was at Arkansas, he's a big body, he got a big range, he can jump up and win those one-on-one battles. But here's the key, TD. All that stuff is great, all that stuff is awesome, but the only thing that's holding Treylon Burks back is believing that he can do it. And once he believes that he can do it, I'm telling you, he can be one of the best wide receivers in the league.
It's interesting you said that, because we just talked to Derek Mason in the opening segment, and I asked him the question about just a bit of advice. And he said he actually relayed advice that you gave him as far as controlling what you could control and not letting outside people influence how you walk in the building. How much of the mental side of things do you feel there's room for improvement for Burks? And that's not to say that he's a mental, he's not there now, but how much is there for him to improve?
But see the thing about it, it's a mental thing. When we say mental thing, it's not that you're crazy or you're acting goofy. It's just saying, you know what, it's dominating those feelings when you say you can't. I'm going to give you a perfect example. You just talked about Derek Mason. Derek Mason was the sixth receiver going into the Super Bowl. He was a sixth receiver. All he did was punt return. He'll come sometimes on third down, but he waited his turn. He practiced every day. He lined up every day. He made the plays every day in practice, and he did what he could control while it was at hand. So now he waited his chance. A couple of guys got hurt. He gets inserted into the starting role. Me and him are starting, and then he takes off, and also he becomes one of the best wide receivers in Titans history.
Now, question for you. When you look at a Treylon Burks, though, and him being a first-round pick, and him being a guy that's inappropriately tagged as, hey, you're A.J. Brown's replacement.
See that?
Do you think that process is accelerated for him? Does it make it tougher for him to wait his turn, so to speak?
It's pressure. It's a different kind of pressure. When I was a third-rounder, you know, I was a 67 pick in the draft. I was a got picked in the third round. There was a little bit of pressure, but it wasn't as pressure as a first rounder. When you keep hearing, when you come in, that you're A.J. Brown's replacement, that's all you keep hearing. So here's the thing. You're under microscope. When you walk in the building, they're talking about your weight. When you're in meetings, oh, he's not ready. When he drops a pass in practice, they say he's not ready. The one thing he has to do this, is he has to tell his emotions to shut up. And the reason why you need to tell your emotions to shut up is you need to eliminate all that chatter that's going around you and focus at the task at hand.
I love that comment right there, and that's 100% true. How much do you think guys like DeAndre Hopkins and now Calvin Ridley, how much do you think that adds to just the release of pressure for him and allows him to just, hey, just go out and play ball?
Did you hear what you just said? You can just go out and play ball. Now you don't have to hear the comparisons of A.J. Brown. And I'm going to give you a perfect example of what I'm talking about. In 1998, Kevin Dyson got drafted, by the Tennessee Titans, and everybody's mad because they didn't draft
Randy Moss.
So there's a pressure, but what Kevin Dyson did is he said, you know what, regardless of what they're saying, regardless of they said they got Randy Moss, I'm going to do some things great. And he had some of the biggest plays in Titans history. What was that? Coming up a yard short in the Super Bowl, Music City Miracle. He fit the mold where he was supposed to be.
Yeah, you got to get in where you fit in. And speaking of that, right, so Brian Callahan was asked about the wide receiver position and possibly drafting one.
Oh, my God.
And he said, listen, he said, look, we need someone to emerge as a slot receiver. He proceeded to mention Kyle Phillips. He mentioned Mason Kinsey.
Yeah.
He mentioned Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. Mm-hmm. no mention of Treylon Burks.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you put stock in that, or how do you receive that?
I mean, if I'm Burks and I hear a coach say that, first of all, I'm going to get better, not better. I know that's kind of cliché-ish. But what I'm going to do is I'm not just going to be considered a perimeter outside receiver. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the playbook and I'm going to go to coach. What's the wide receiver?
Tyke Tolbert. Yeah.
Tyke Tolbert. I'm going to go to Tyke Tolbert and say this. Listen, I want to learn every position. I know they're looking at me as a perimeter guy. I want to know the slot. I want to know everything of what I need to do to better my game. And I think that that's what's going to make Treylon Burks better, as opposed to just saying, oh, you're labeling me as a slot receiver. Again, I'm going to give you another example. When I came into the NFL, everybody was they were saying, oh, he's just a track guy, you know, playing football. So here's what I did. I went to Les Tekle. I said, Les Tekle, teach me everything about the route tree. Tell me about a game plan to get off the line of scrimmage. Tell me about lying with my eyes. Tell me about burst off the cut. Tell me about putting chocolate sauce on my route. Then once I mastered that, TD, my game took off, and I can play every position.
And that's what it takes, right, the cross-training.
Yes.
Nick Holes, he talked about Calvin Ridley, and he discussed how he looks forward to moving him around, right? Yes. And then he talked about how he didn't want to pigeonhole guys into outside guys or slot guys. How much do you think Treylon Burks fits that role?
I think he can play a big role because here's the thing. When you're on the outside perimeter, there's only so many routes you can run. You want to come back, a post, a dig, and all that. But when you're in the slot, it's not just running the choice routes, you know, the slants, the hitches, and all that stuff. You can run bubbles. You can run speed sweeps. There's so many things away you can get him the ball in his hand. Because if you look at Treylon Burks, when he was with Arkansas, he would catch a little bubble route, and he took it the distance. Why don't you use that same concept when he's with this Callahan offense? I know they say, oh, well, he can't get out of his cuts today. Okay, whatever. But the thing about it is, get him in a bubble. Give him a speed sweep. Get him in the ball in his hands so he can get those 10, 11-yard chunks of yards.
That's it right there, manufactured touches.
Yes.
You go back and you watch that Alabama game. Like, it was
Treylon
Burks versus Alabama. You know what I mean?
Yes.
It was a pretty good battle. Yeah.
What? Man, why you get me all excited, man? You know why I'm excited about Treylon Burks right now? It's because in 1995, they said all this negative stuff about me. He can't do that. He can't run routes. You're taking a chance on this kid. You know what I said? I said, guess what? I'm going to play so stinking well that you're going to have to play me. I went from being like the eighth receiver to the third receiver to starting the third game. That's the mentality he's got to have right there.
That is absolutely the mentality. Ooh. Ooh. As far as Burks is concerned, right? When you look at just the dog, right? You know, certain players have it, certain players don't.
I'm not
saying he doesn't have it, but what can he do to show more of that?
You know, we always talk about practice to create good habits. And the way you keep have good habits is doing it over and over and over again. And the reason why I share that illustration is, when you got to make the tough catch in practice, do it over and over and over again. That's how you get the dog. See, let me make this really, really clear. When you talk about having a dog in you, being a dog is not cussing out the coach or grabbing people's face, man.
Right.
It's not none of that. That's not dog. That's being an idiot. And I'm not calling nobody an idiot. But I'm saying being a dog is when it's 3rd and 10. And you're about to get hit by a safety, and you're getting hit by a linebacker, and you figure out mentality that I know I'm going to get blasted, but I come up with the catch. That's what it means to be a dog right there.
Absolutely, man. That's it right there.
That's, you know what I'm saying? That's dog. We got the misconception that the louder you are means that you got the most dog in you. The one that makes the most noise is the one that's the most insecure.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, my dad will always tell me, he said, you kick a trash can that's full and you kick one that's empty. Guess which one makes the more noise? The empty one. So you're 100% right. And I think, you know, that's the thing. It's about showing in your play. And that's something. And he has it. You look at, you know, when he had that deep catch against the Packers. You look at the catch this year against the Chargers. Like, he got up and he, you know what I mean? He made sure the crowd knew that he was hype. And I think, you know, that's it. It was crucial times where they needed a catch, and he made it.
Yeah, he did, and that's what it is. Did you hear what you said? When it comes up with a crucial catch, he made it. That's having dog in you right there. You know, but we, you know, it's not about how much noise you make. I mean, look at Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice was a guy that made a lot of noise, but he's going to make that tough catch over the middle.
He sure was, without a doubt, man, without a doubt. Now, that's what, you know, we'll need to see from Treylon Burks if he wants to establish himself as a guy in this rotation, man. Real quick, though, let me tell you. I was watching this movie, right?
Oh my God.
It's an old school movie. My daughter Devin and I were watching it, and it was actually The Toy, right?
Oh my God.
And there was a part where the guy, he was entertaining the kid, right?
Oh my God.
He was in the water in the pond, and he got up and ran across the pond on the top of the water, right? And he had a bunch of holes in him because the piranhas were in the pond. They bit him up, right? And my daughter turned to me and she was like, I know that guy, Chris Sanders, is fast. But I didn't realize he could walk, run across water.
Oh, my God.
I said, oh, no, that's not Chris Sanders. That's Richard Pryor.
Oh, yeah. But guess what? I got one in the chamber. Me and my wife was watching An Officer and a Gentleman. So one of the officers walked by, and my baby was like, hey, I did not know that T.D. played in Officer and a Gentleman. I said, baby, that's not T.D. That's Lou Gossett Jr.
Get out of here. Yo, what's up, everybody? This is Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Titans. And I want to tell you about ESPN Bet, because they're ready to take you through all the huge sports moments this spring. The exclusive sportsbook of ESPN has it all, including offers and promotions from Scott Van Pelt and Stephen A. Smith. From the playoff intensity to getting on the links and out to the ballpark, there's no better time to be a sports fan. New users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee. For problem gambling support, call or text TN Redline 800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. See the app for detail.
This is Jefferson. I'm talking with TD.
1, 2, 3.
All right, back from the break. Talking with TD. You heard Jeffrey Simmons bring us in, so you know what we about to do. We about to talk about those trenches. And one of the best guys. And here's the thing, folks. I remember watching this next guy come along and progress, and I always enjoyed his talk about the draft period, but defensive line talk specifically. And we have similar paths, right? We both just kind of came along and made our way. And our next guest is Charles McDonald, Yahoo Sports, and he's over there shining, man. I appreciate you coming on, Charles. What's good?
Yeah, appreciate you having me. I feel like we definitely did come up the same way, because it's like, hey, both really like football. Would like to keep being around football as I get older. And, yeah, here we are. You're at ESPN, at Yahoo, and then things are going good for both of us.
No doubt about it. And, you know, the macaroni and cheese story with Andy Reid. Can you just let the fans know? Because that's just hilarious, man. I don't know who else has a story like that.
Yes, yeah, so for those who don't know, I guess one of my little claims to fame is I got a mac and cheese recipe from Andy Reid. I think, man, this is like 2018 at this point. It's a long time ago. But I just like happened to be at the Indianapolis airport, and like I had been on the road for a few weeks, and I remember my flight got delayed back to Baltimore. I was a little frustrated, so I took a lap around the airport, and when I came back, like the entire Chiefs coaching staff was sitting in my seats, you know, on the Indianapolis airport on the way out from the combine. And I don't know how, but I was talking to one of the coaches about, you know, our favorite Thanksgiving dishes. And then Andy, you know, chimes in. He's like, y'all talk about Thanksgiving food? yep, sure am. He was like, oh, I got a killer mac and cheese recipe that I'd like to share with you. So I would obviously love to get to your mac and cheese recipe. And he was like, what's your phone number? I was like, what? He was like, I know, it's cool. He's like, I'll just give you my phone number. So gave me his phone number. He texted me his mac and cheese recipe, and he's got a ton of recipes on his phone. And then I asked if I could share it. He said, yeah. And then it blew up for me. So that was a fun day. You know, 6 years later, 5 years later, people start bringing it up.
It's hilarious. And then you saw him at one of his podium sessions, and he remembers you.
Yeah, at the Super Bowl last year when they played the Eagles. I was like, because they were asking, you know, we're walking around like Super Bowl media night. And, you know, if you cover Super Bowl, you know, Super Bowl media night is just for goofing off.
Yeah.
You get to see stuff later in the week. So you know, we're sitting there as a team. We're like, man, how can we go viral? I was like, oh, Andy's around. I know we can go viral. And they were like, what are you talking about? I was like, just watch, just wait and see. And, you know, I brought it up to him, and he remembered, and he got a big old chuckle out of it. You know, we still keep in touch with him once in a while. So that's been a good story, and he's been a good person to talk to over the past few years.
That's hilarious. So we're talking about mac and cheese, you know, and eating Thanksgiving. It's only right we talk about the trenches. And I wanted to bring you on to talk about some of these defensive tackles specifically. Jeffrey Simmons, he brought us in. He's clearly the alpha on that Titans front. But when you look at this draft and you look at pick number 38, if they remain there, who are some of the guys that you could see as options for the Titans that could come in and help him out?
Well, you know, you could always get lucky and have, like, a Byron Murphy or a Johnny Newton fall. Mm-hmm. Because, I think probably if I had to guess, like, which one of those guys would fall, it would probably be Johnny Newton. And, you know, I'm a guy I would take. Johnny Newton, top 12, like, no problem. I think he's that disruptive, that good. But the NFL has always been a little bit weird in how they value some of the shorter defensive line options. You know, I think back to guys like Grady Jarrett and Geno Atkins in college who they played well in college. They had pretty good testing. But the NFL, when they see, like, that 6'1", 6 feet thing, they kind of get a little bit nervous. So, you know, maybe he could be an option at 38. But, you know, I think that's kind of the weird spot in this draft class to me was for the defensive line talent, because you have those two guys at the top, Murphy and Newton, and I think there's a little bit of a drop off. So at 38, I think you I wouldn't say reach, but like you're kind of rolling the dice on potential there. You know, I think someone like Mason Smith from LSU, he kind of reminds me of where we were talking about Chris Jones when he was a prospect coming out of Mississippi State, where it's like, hey, you got this big, huge guy who's pretty athletic, and you know the play on the film is a little bit up and down. But if someone can harness into that, that might be a huge boom for you on the defensive side of the ball. So you know, if he kind of checks out with his interviews and how people feel about his play, then he could be an option at 38. If you're going like super size, I know he's had a bit of a rough week, but Devondre Sweat. I'm pretty sure he's a guy that people will still like, you know, maybe in that day two portion of the draft. But, you know, after his DUI, he'll probably have to clear that up for himself a little bit. And I think, you know, 38 is kind of a weird spot for a defensive line. But I think if Newton falls, it's probably your best shot, unless you want to trade back and maybe take a bigger swing at someone like Mason Smith or Michael Hall from Ohio State.
Oh, you mentioned him right there. I love watching Michael Hall. And you look at how sudden he is off the ball and then his moves. Like he and – JPJ, you know, from Oregon, man. Those guys, they were going at it at the Senior Bowl, huh?
Oh, yeah. I missed the Senior Bowl, but I did get to see some of the clips and the cut-ups. And, yeah, those boys were going at it. You know, Oregon, they have another guy on defense.
Go ahead. Preach.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I really like his tape. You know, we do this thing where we've been in our mock draft where for teams who don't have a first-round pick, we'll just mock you someone. And for our Browns pick in the last one, I think they have, like, pick 54. So, you know, later in the second round, we were giving them Brandon Dorlus. Because, you know, this is – you know, if you're looking for, like, a long-term Za'Darius Smith-type replacement, I think he could be that guy where, you know, you have these tweeners, right, where it's like, oh, I don't know if you play defensive end or defensive tackle, which is not necessarily a bad thing. But I think with those guys, you always have to start off from the standpoint, like, are you getting blown off the ball – you know, on like 50% of your snaps, because it's cool if like you're getting up the field and stuff like that, and you're making those disruptive plays. But if I can't count on you to stand tall against like a base block, then what are we really doing here? And I think with Dorlus, he's got like the strength to kind of play against some of the heavier offensive linemen, and also can flex out and like run down to maybe even be a pocket pusher from the outside. So, you know, he's someone that I really like, you know, if you can grab him like late round two or early round three, because just from asking around, doesn't seem like he's going to be someone that's like scratching that first round or top of the second round area.
Yeah, no, that's a good mention right there. And we're talking to Charles McDonald, NFL draft analyst and just overall NFL writer for Yahoo Sports. Charles, you touched on Mason Smith and him coming back from injury, you know, obviously this past year, that's what that was. So maybe you do catch lightning in a bottle, right, where he gets another year back from the injury and he really starts to hit that potential. But the other guy you mentioned was Devondre Sweat. And, again, we know what has happened. I'm not going to harp upon that. But
right.
for those who say, okay, this is a two down lineman. This is a guy that, you know, isn't really someone you want on the field in pass rush situations. Do you agree with that? And if not, how do you dispute it?
I don't want to just confine him to that box, you know, because he's got some clips. You know, it's not quite like watching the Jordan Davis at Georgia where you're like, holy crap, like that's a huge person moving that fast. But in terms of just like, dude, there just aren't many too many college football offensive linemen that can just, if you send with someone who's that big and strong and just wear at them over the course of a game, like he definitely had some nice reps where he was pocket pushing, even working like a little couple rip moves every once in a while.
Yeah.
Now, like through the NFL, I don't know, because I feel like the guards are just more athletic and maybe that would be a bit of a struggle for him. But like I wouldn't put it past him if he ends up being one of those guys that can actually like rush the passer from one tech, because it's so hard to find. But you know, he's got a plan. He's got some moves. It's just like, all right, when the opponents get stronger, what does this look like? And I guess like how frequently are you getting home? That's the question that I have.
Looking at this Titans pass rush, right? Obviously, we talked about the guys on the interior. I'm going to mention the name, Darius Robinson. I want to get your thoughts on him. And then also, anybody that you could see, you know, in that first or second round as pass rushers, as far as edge guys are concerned, that will come in and help the Titans.
Oh, Darius Robinson. You know, as I get older, I'm trying to be, like, kinder. I view him more as like a, personally for me, I view him more as like a later, like day three kind of prospect.
Okay.
I tend to like, you know, guys who are just a little bit more explosive than that. And to me, that's kind of the one area that I was a little worried about on his film. But I do think like he's got the skill. It's just, you know, when we're talking about to me, like adding someone who you think can really kind of, Not just like be on your defensive line, but like be an active participant in getting up the field. I would put some other guys ahead of them.
Okay.
That's how I feel.
So, yeah, and you know what? I look at him as not an edge guy, right? I look at him as somebody, you know, 3-4 and 4-3 tackle, like that type. So I agree with you there as far as the suddenness. But you mentioned suddenness. Who are some guys you think, you know, that the Titans could use? And I'm not talking about at pick number 7. I'm talking about more like 38. Okay, Chris Braswell, for example. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah. He was solid. Like, I think he's kind of a guy that, you know, if he's your – and we're talking about him on day 2, so, you know, I think the draft range reflects it. Like, if he's your leading off guy, then maybe you probably need some help there, but – someone who can come in and be like a second or a third guy who does a lot of the dirty work. That's where I like him. Cause you know, you watch him play and he's played across from some dynamic guys, with Dallas Turner and Will Anderson in recent years. But still like he's kept finding ways to get on the field and finding ways to be productive. And he was asked to do a lot for them, on Alabama's defense. Like there's reps of him in coverage, like trying to carry wheel routes. Doesn't always go the best for him, but he's out there and he knows, you know, at least like what is being asked from him and how to do it in a manner that's productive for a defense. So, you know, I like him. To me, like Chris Braswell is just like a quintessential football player. And it sounds so lazy to kind of describe someone like that, but you know, just, come in, do the dirty work, and you know you kind of look up at the end of the season. He's probably had like 6 or 7 sacks in a cleanup role.
Pick 106. You need an edge guy. You need a defensive tackle. Who are two guys that you would think of?
So for defensive tackle, I think I'll go back to LSU and Mekhi Wingo, the other defensive lineman. This is a guy like I don't know why he's being mocked where he is. Cause you know, for people who aren't familiar with my work, I'm a Falcons fan. So I tend to view things through, I try not to, cause you know, it's been a rough stretch of career, but you know, you think of the players that you watch a lot. And when I watch him, Grady Jarrett comes to mind to me where he's not the tallest guy. I think he's, you know, just at 6 feet, probably just at 300 pounds. But man, he does a lot for LSU's defense, and he was productive too. And he's like 20 years old, and I see him in, like, you know, the fourth round of mock drafts. You talk to people, he's going like day three and, you know, or late day two. And it's a little baffling me, but if he's on the board for, you know, the middle portion of the draft, Mekhi Wingo, I think that's if I had to guess one guy where we look back at this in 3 or 4 years and say, man, what the hell were we thinking having this guy draft in the fourth round? When you start looking at the boxes that he checks, I would go with Mekhi Wingo. As far as an edge rusher, it's tough because I don't think that this edge rushing class is maybe as deep as other ones, but mm-hmm. Depending on where you can get a guy like Jonah Ellis from Utah, I'm not sure like where he's being projected, because I've seen him like in the first round of mocks, I've seen him in the fourth round of mocks, so it's a little hard to get, you know, where his draft range is, but I don't know. I think he's one of those guys where you plug him into your pass rush rotation, you feel good. He kind of reminds me, and a couple of these guys in this class remind me of like the role that the Cassius Marsh played for the Seahawks teams, where, you know, maybe you're not Cliff Averill, but you're coming off the bench behind Cliff Averill, and those are some pretty valuable snaps in like the capacity in which you can provide those. That's where I would put someone like Jonah Ellis in this draft class.
And we're talking to Charles McDonald, NFL draft writer, NFL writer overall with Yahoo Sports, and we're digging into this defensive line. Before I get you out of here, give me your elevator pitch for Dallas Turner at number 7. Let's say, you know, the Titans, they pick, it's their turn, Joe Alt is off the board, Olu Fashanu is there, Rome Odunze is there, Dallas Turner is there, Brock Bowers is there. What is your elevator pitch for Turner?
Well, you're in the AFC South. You got CJ Stroud twice a year. Anthony Richardson's back. You're going to see him twice a year. I'm still a huge believer in Trevor Lawrence's talent and think he's one of the best in the game, or one of the better quarterbacks in the game. See that twice a year. You can never go wrong trying to get more pass rushers. And, you know, Dallas Turner, I think when you look at his film, maybe it's not always the cleanest, but here's just the deal when it comes to edge rushers in the NFL and projecting them. You can learn a lot about what someone might be based on their physical traits. Yeah, I think that's true a lot for edge rushers. To think about how fast these guys are getting rid of the ball. You need someone who's athletic enough and powerful enough to get to the quarterback in, you know, 2 or 3 seconds. And Dallas Turner, you're not going to find too many 21-year-old pass rushers who are 250 pounds and run the 4.4.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> Like, that's the elevator pitch. He's got room to grow, but you're starting off with a body that is powerful enough to, like, play inside and rush against guards from time to time, and also fast enough to run a 4.4. So I kind of understand the investment, but I'm going to need him to let him slide to 8 so the Falcons can finally get a pass rusher for the first time since John Abraham was there, you know?
There you have it right there. That's my guy, man, Charles McDonald. You can check him out on Twitter at 4, spelled out, F-O-U-R, Verts, V-E-R-T-S. Man, appreciate you coming on. Yeah, you've come a long way from Setting the Edge, man. That used to be one of my pods to listen to right there.
Yeah, I got to produce it now. It's not just me and my buddy Justice with a tin can between our houses. we got a real mic set up now.
Yeah, for sure, man. Appreciate you, man. We'll see how things work out.
All right, see you later, man.
All right, my guy. So that was Charles McDonald, man. Listen, I love seeing people do well, right? And I'm one that finds excitement and enjoyment out of that. So it's been great watching him, among others, man. Like, it's a little crew of us, right? C-Mac, Emery Hunt, Brandon Howard, who is now doing fantasy sports. Also, got my guy Chris James, I call him the Rev, my guy Gene Clemens. He's doing a lot of Giants content, you know, Jordan Reed. It's just a nice thing, like, seeing the crew, just everybody just, you know, make their mark, man. So it's fun getting a guy like C-Mac on, so I appreciate him coming on. Definitely appreciate you talk about birds of a feather, right? We got Chris Sanders. We got Derek Mason. Appreciate both of them for coming on, former Titans receivers. Got my guy, David James.
Yes, sir.
Memphis's finest right there.
The M, shout out.
And then we got each of you. And I will say this. I truly appreciate each of you tuning in, checking us out. Make sure you check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get your fine listen materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.